Thank you, David.
Welcome, everybody. The Trust for Public Land has a mission. I want to give you a little background on who we are. Okay, and I don't have any relationships to disclose. We conserve land for people to enjoy as parks, gardens, and other natural places, ensuring livable communities for generations to come. That's the Trust for Public Land. We're based in San Francisco. It's about a 35-year-old organization, has bought more than 2 million acres of land, ranging from inner city community gardens all the way up to big wilderness areas in Alaska and other places, the Rockies. And we have a special focus on people, unlike, let's say, the Nature Conservancy, which is more focused on endangered species. We're focused on people. The subset of TPL that I run is called the Center for City Park Excellence. I'm not allowed outside the Beltway in any city that I visit. And I work only on city parks. And our mission is to make cities more successful and healthier through the innovative renewal, creation, and use of parks for their social, ecological, and economic benefits to residents, workers, and visitors alike. So we are really focused on cities, and we're really focused on how parks can make cities better places. And I think the two biggest drivers right now in the work that we're doing are the obesity crisis and the health crisis that brings all of you here to Washington, and the urban sprawl crisis that is the subject of many other forums and conversations around the country in terms of people moving farther and farther away from cities to have a little bit of green space and make sure that our cities have the kind of green space that attracts and retains residents. So because of this, we collect every possible shred of parks data that we can lay our hands on. We're a data gathering organization. And I think that's the main reason that I'm here today. We're very pleased that we were accepted to be part of the conversation at APHA, first time that TPL has been invited to be part of this. And it's because we offer you as health professionals and researchers and people that are looking for factual data and information, a vehicle to try and work with you closely and provide you the kind of parks data that you might be looking for as you're doing your research and outreach and promotion. So even though we're not a public health organization per se, we are trying to work as closely as possible with those of you who are doing this kind of work. We have an extremely broad definition of parks. For us, they include ball fields, plazas, forests and wetlands in cities, greenways and rail trails, playgrounds, old-fashioned country parks, neighborhood squares, schoolyards that are open to the public after school hours, even community gardens or boulevards, or even indoor recreation centers located on public park property. And I handed out, for those of you who were here earlier, I handed out our latest data collection, which I'm going to be talking about mostly in my talk now. This just came out a couple of days ago, and for those of you who don't have one, there's some in the back, data collection on what's available about parks. Naturally, parks serve multitudes of uses and users. Most of the people in this room, I think, are interested in the human users, especially human users who are active enough to get their hearts pumping and their muscles working. But other constituencies use our data and contact us day in and day out for things like the environmental benefits, capturing the raindrop, slowing down the raindrop, helping to reduce stormwater in cities and water pollution, wildlife, all the benefits that parks provide for wildlife, real estate. Of course, there's a lot of talk about how parks help build up the value of real estate in cities. The social implications of parks, people interfacing with each other, enjoying each other, getting to meet each other, building up social capital, and all the other many benefits of parks, which we study day in and day out. So what kind of information do we have? We have acreage numbers. We're focusing our attention on the 100 biggest cities in the country right now, just because of our staff limitation and our budgetary limitation. The 100 largest cities takes you down to a population of about 200,000 people. So all the cities from New York City on down to places with 200,000 population, like Hialeah, Florida, and other places like that. We break our cities down into density levels so that we compare the high density cities with each other, and the medium to high density, and the lower density, and the very low density, because people in different cities live very differently with their parks. In a place like Boston, almost nobody would drive to their park because they couldn't get their car out. If they had a car, they couldn't get it out of their current parking space, and they couldn't find another parking space near the park. In a place like Phoenix, probably almost everybody ends up driving to a park. So then there's many other differences too, but density is a very significant factor. So instead of trying to compare Phoenix with Boston, we compare Phoenix with Dallas and Houston and other places like that, and Boston with Baltimore and Chicago and crowded places like that. So we have acreage numbers, and we break out our acreage numbers a number of different ways. The parkland per 1,000 residents, basically how much parkland there is per person, and that earlier one was the percent of the city land that's devoted to parks. And those are two interesting ways of doing it. Many of you who are working with human health are going to be more interested in the acres per 1,000 residents. And then we collect data on all the different kinds of sports facilities and facilities, not just sports facilities, but facilities that are in cities, ball diamonds and basketball hoops and pools and community gardens and bicycle trails and anything we can count, we collect data on, and we break it down on a per capita basis so that you're really measuring apples with apples, whether you're dealing with a big city or a little city or a highly populated or less so. We keep track of the employees for each agency, and then we break it down for employees per 10,000 residents so that we have an idea of which cities are providing a lot of park workers and which cities aren't. And of course, a lot of that comes down to spending, and we pay a lot of attention to park spending, which of course is a key element as to the success of a park system, which cities are well funded for a variety of different reasons. And of course, we do a lot of other studies as to why they're well funded and how they're funded and things like that, which if any of you are interested in, we're happy to provide you with, but at least we know the spending levels. We have fairly good data on visitation, and this is probably, for many of you, this is probably the single most important factor. It's probably the most important factor for us, too. It's a very hard number to count, and we're very reliant on researchers of all types and stripes to help get us this data, which we keep updating. So I can't promise you that we have visitation data on every park in the country, but we are moving in that direction, and we hope to have more as we go along. We're doing something new now, which is called Park Score, basically how far people are from their parks, whether people are within a 10-minute walk, half-mile distance from their parks or not, and how much, what percentage of a city's population is within that distance. So this is what it looks like numerically. For those of you in the back, you probably can't read this, but this is Denver. These are all drafts because we're doing them right now, and there's probably going to be a little bit of modification as we tighten up the numbers. But right, it shows now that 79% of all the people in Denver are within a half-mile walk, a 10-minute walk, a half-mile distance of a park, keeping in mind what I said about all the different kind of parks we look at. So it might be a playground, or it might be a big city park, or it might be a bike trail, but an actual greenway. We're not counting bike lanes on streets, but an actual greenway. And we're using the network analyst version of GIS so that it's not just a random half-mile circle, but it's a sophisticated circle that takes into account highways and rivers and railroad tracks and busy roads that don't have crossing signs on it. And so that comes down to 79%. Some of the other cities that we've studied so far, and that we're still in the midst of this, Boston was coming out at above 90%, and some other of the more sprawling cities like Charlotte, North Carolina, was coming out around 20 to 30%. So there is a tremendous range in how close people are to parks. And it's very interesting to look at what neighborhoods are well served and which aren't. This is what it looks, so that's what it looked like numerically. This is what it looks like graphically, visually. The red area, this is Chicago. The red areas are by the way we measure it, and I can't go into all the details, but it takes into account both children, income, and population density. The red areas are the most severely short of parkland. The orange areas are short of parkland. The dark green are the parks, and the light green are the parts of the city that are within a half-mile walk of some kind of parkland. So Chicago is doing pretty well, better than many other cities. But it does highlight which neighborhoods we and the Chicago Park District and the mayor and everyone else in between should focus attention on in terms of park equity. So these are the two addresses where we can most easily be found. TPL is the Trust for Public Land. So tpl.org/CCPE, which is the Center for City Park Excellence. That gives all of our data. We have numerous articles on many different issues that you might be interested in. If you want to go directly to the City Park Facts aspect of our work, then it's just /City Park Facts. And if you have any further questions or ideas that you want to investigate with us, we would love to talk with you about those. In my remaining 2 minutes, I'll just quickly tell you a few of our, in addition to our data availability, which I think is probably number one for this audience, just some of our programs. We're working on fitness zones. Fitness zones are sort of one step up from the old park courses. These are actually movable exercise equipment, outdoor gyms, free and non-electric and relatively weather resistant. That we are putting up in parks and along trails in cooperation with the vendors. We're very interested in the medical mile. Some of you may have heard of the medical mile. The first one was in Little Rock, Arkansas. We love the idea. It's basically a trail, a greenway like this one, but it happens to be sponsored by, funded by, and promoted by, and branded by one or another or multiple medical institutions, whether a hospital or a insurance company or someone else from the public sector side. It's kind of a marriage between the public health infrastructure and the parks infrastructure. And the parks people know how to build trails, know how to maintain them and mow them and do other things. The health community can bring in some money and some medical information. So some people just use the trail as a regular trail to run by. They run past all these signs, don't pay any attention to them. Others read every sign, learn about everything from, you know, heart health and bone health and helmet safety and everything else that you would use on a trail. We're working with park agencies around the country to reduce the amount of car traffic in parks to make it more people friendly, safer, healthier, less pollution, and more space for people to use it. This is Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, the difference between Saturday and Sunday when they don't have cars there. And we're helping to create sort of meetup type locations where people, especially women, can run together or be active together if they're a little bit scared of their parks or not sure how to get out of the park once they get into it or something like that. Because we recognize that even though most of us love parks, many people have qualms about going in there in the first place, and they want to exercise, but they're a little bit intimidated. And of course, we're working to increase the level of safety on parks, and I think we're going to hear more about safety in parks later on in the session. So that's who I am, Peter Harnick, and we'd love to talk with you either at the end of this session or when you get back to your cities We're here in Washington, and thank you very much for having us. Thank you, David.
I guess we have about 5 minutes for questions, if you have them for Peter.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were doing them right now. Okay. Yeah, please. Why don't you stand up? Data on which cities have banned smoking in parks? That's a good question. We haven't started collecting that. I'm not sure how many. Is anybody else from a place that has banned smoking in parks? Where's that? Okay, wonderful. Well, we'll start collecting that. That's a good point. It's such a new issue. It hasn't really come up yet. Are you studying that at all?
I'm sure the New York City Department of Health is considering the prevention as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is how we get most of our data collection, from ideas from letters and audiences. Thank you. Anything else? Yes, please. Yep, it is extremely challenging to collect. We are pretty much at the mercy of, for most of the data that we collect, we're at the mercy of the agencies that run the parks. And we do everything we can to verify, hold their feet to the fire, and, you know, we now know so much about numbers that when if we see a number that looks a little bit off, we go back to them and say, are you sure about this, and why is this so different from what it would be expected to be? So that's for all of the data, like spending and employment and things like that. For the usership, we're pretty much at the mercy of them. In some cases, universities or even high schools, sometimes they're doing counts now, which we encourage all the time. We're encouraging everybody to count. Our field, unlike public health or transportation or a few other fields like that, the parks and recreation field is woefully undercounted on almost everything. And so our mantra is count. Our mantra is, if you don't count, you don't count. And so we're trying to be counted on every level. For the bike trails, they've started instituting a more rigorous counting method with either the rubber tubes or with a beam, breaking a beam as people go by. It's relatively easier to count bike trails. Of course, in parks like state parks and national parks that have that many of them have just a single entrance or a couple of entrances, and many people come by car, they can have much more accurate counts. But if you have a park either with multiple entrances or even no entrances at all, just walking across a curb, you have to do sampling. You have to figure out where the majority of the people come into the park, and then figure out the percentages of some of the other entrance ways to start getting more accurate counts. In Bryant Park, New York, which is one of the most carefully monitored park and has a little bit more money to do that than anybody else, they actually have somebody going out with two clickers, a male clicker and a female clicker, at 1 p.m. every day. So they have a daily count of all the people in Bryant Park by gender, and that's kind of the gold standard right now, but we're trying to get there with all the parks. Anything else? Thank you.